Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the 60th episode of the Mod State Podcast, the long overdue weekend beat. So, one thing that was overlooked in the media last week was the anniversary of Pearl Harbor. So for our weekend beat, John and I are going to discuss a little bit about Pearl Harbor. And, you know, I lived in Hawaii for a number of years, so being there was kind of eye-opening when you think about a foreign invader essentially bombing the place that you lived, even though it was, you know, some 70 years ago. So, as always, if you want more from Mod State, go to modstate.com. There's more op-ed and opinion pieces, the links to the podcast, all the links to our social media. You can find me at modstate_Nate. That's at my Twitter. And on my Facebook at Nate Welline, where you can get more links to the podcasts. So, enough of this intro. Let's get John on the line.
You want the envelope? There. You take it. It's all yours. You kill all three of them for nothing. You greenhorn, you blockheaded jackass, you nincompoop.
And we're live, my friend. How are you?
Good, sir. How are you?
Oh, always living the dream. I hope you're staying warm and sunny, NO. Or cold, NO, whatever I'm saying.
I mean, well, normally speaking, I mean, the bone chilling cold I thought was supposed to be because of wind and humidity, but apparently South Louisiana and South Mississippi became Detroit?
Not even, man. I don't think they've had 6 inches of snow there yet, to be honest.
You normally do, and Detroit and Denver normally do, and I think I was talking to my cousin Ashley, and we got all the snow, 6-7 inches in Bay Springs, which is near the coast of Mississippi, and none in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in the Smoky Mountains.
Yeah, that's it's a bit bizarre.
The apocalypse is upon us.
It is. Bunker down. Hopefully you got your underground bunker. It's happening.
I mean, I'm good. I've long said I can only take so many clothes off and people in public want to be around, you know. So I'm long appreciated cold weather. I don't sweat, you know, hot nature. So
that works.
We're cool.
Yeah, I typically feel the same way. I love the cold
weather. I like winter clothes anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed Hawaii, which is a good segue. Oh. But that's because everyone was walking around in tank tops and stuff like that. So it worked out. And it's never overbearingly hot. It's tropical. Right. So.
And if there weren't so many problems with harassment, as the English would say, I would say it's warm weather's nice because of the fairer sex. But we can't say that anymore.
Yeah, fair enough. You're right.
I mean, winter clothes are cool either way.
I agree. And I kept all of them. For 4 years, I knew it would be back where it would be cold. But even then, it's still 60 degrees here.
You need to get you a navy peacoat.
Oh, all right.
Those are cool. I mean, they're well-made, and with the anchor buttons, I mean, you know, I wear my dad's army jacket still, so I'll get it for you, though.
Yeah, that's pretty classy. I've, you know, just because of nursing and the army, I never really invested in nice clothes. And I don't mean nice clothes like Versace or something really expensive. I just mean classy clothes. It was always two suits that were somewhat in style, and
suits will never go out.
Never go out of style. Never.
Why is it though that the Navy still has the Eisenhower jacket, but the Army abandoned it?
I don't know.
Even the Marines used the Eisenhower. I mean, I got my father one for, I think it was his birthday last year.
That's the that's the black. Just the,
yeah, it's got the lapel straps, you know, it with no collar.
You're right, no collar.
I got one from old man, you know, for his birthday last March. I think it was his birthday. Anyway, I got him one last year. And here he was, you know, left the service as a sergeant in the Army in the 70s. I'm like, what? Why do you not have this?
I don't even know when they stopped. I mean, we've gone through so many uniform changes.
But it's named that way for a reason. The last 5-star general we had.
Yeah.
And, you know, regardless, I mean, even the Marines use it now. And the Marines in the Army have a bigger rivalry than the Navy and the Army do.
Speaking of which, yeah, that happened this weekend.
Second year in a row, man.
Yeah. They, you know, well, that's what happens when it snows and you wear white uniforms.
Man, I'm telling you, it's like the Army's like, oh, yeah, Navy, you went on a 13-year run. Wow. Here comes 14 of our own. I mean, the Army has reinvented themselves. Good for y'all.
Hey, there's a little bit of, not that there was never pride, but I mean, when I was in, especially being in D.C., you know, it's like Army versus Navy. And I'm like, man, we just get skunked every year. It's like, woo, yeah, all right. But I don't know. I mean, never. I guess when you're in the Army, you're never a bandwagon Army fan. It's just sort of expected, of but.
I locked into it, of course, because I could have just as easily gone Army, but I mean, man, that the last year the Navy won too, it came in like the last minute.
Yeah.
And then now, I mean, hey, Army's back, man. Congratulations, y'all.
Yeah, it was good. I'd have to.
It was a good game.
I did not do a thing, but I watched and I was impressed. I was happy. So.
Whoa.
Oh, God. I said it. So, anyway. Let's get into we've set the stage. Army, Navy, Hawaii, pea coats, and all sorts of good stuff. But this last week, you know, the anniversary for Pearl Harbor, which we're going to discuss in this weekend beat, sort of got overlooked. I mean, I always have it marked down, but it just blew by, and there was maybe some mention of it, and there was definitely more fanfare last year. It was the 75th last year and 76th this year, so I'm not really blaming a whole lot of people, but there were some interesting things surrounding current events. They found the USS Ward, which the morning of the attack in Pearl Harbor actually sunk a Japanese submarine in right outside of Honolulu, and then consequently was sunk in the Philippines by a kamikaze pilot. So they just found that, which was a really kind of neat thing to find after, you know, 76 years and then right around the anniversary as well. So they had some pictures. If you go back, I'll put a link in the show notes for it, but they've got some cool, cool underwater videos of that. So, you know, I think Pearl Harbor, obviously there's a lot of, fanfare around cinematic movies and entertainment and
conspiracy theorists
yes,
which we're not going to give a nod to here.
No, I'm not well versed in that, so, but I think living in Hawaii gave me a perspective on the actual attack. And if you're ever in a place where, and it, I'm thinking it doesn't, it could be recent or it can be in, you know, the last 100 years, 75 years in this case, when you actually stand where the attack took place, or from your vantage point, I used to live up on the 2 miles up a mountain in Hawaii, and I could look down into Pearl Harbor. And I remember it was just really hard for me to not think about it up front, like just my visceral reaction that I could have watched the attack of Pearl Harbor happen from my house. And for all intent and purpose, like there could have been, I could have watched Japanese aircraft fly around the side of the island where we were at. So it just was an interesting perspective. And even to a cultural level, being in Hawaii, there's a lot of, you know, when you have people who are still living, it wasn't just ships that were sunk and sailors and airmen and Marines and soldiers who were lost. I mean, it really there was quite a bit of upheaval on the island as well. There was, you know, martial law was basically initiated. We can think of the Japanese internment that happened in the United States after this.
Is the former Japanese possession Hawaii?
It was
to a certain degree.
To a certain degree, it definitely kind of like was a
satellite state.
Really, really, what wound up happening was the United States and the Japanese were looking at Hawaii, this sort of like last bastion of territory that was really halfway between both the Japanese mainland and the United States mainland. And the United States basically rolled in and annexed Hawaii and then bought it from the royalty that was there.
I suppose spiritually speaking, it was best framed as a Japanese satellite territory. It wasn't empire proper.
No. And the United States essentially took control of it in the, I believe it was early 20th century, and then of course it became a state later on down the road, and then they housed the fleet there. I believe it was the Pacific Fleet was housed between Hawaii and San Diego at the time, and thank goodness the entire fleet wasn't there, because that would have really devastated the Navy. But there was still quite a bit of the fleet in San Diego at the time. But you know, just to give. Everyone knows what happened. I don't think the point here is to go back and rehash exactly what happened, but maybe give some interesting tidbits about the actual attack and I guess maybe our perspective from being in the Navy and my perspective of living there a bit. But there, if you ever have the chance, I implore you to go to Pearl Harbor. And they've got a wonderful museum there, and it just takes you through the timeline and everything in all its detail. And then, of course, the trip to the Arizona. And I'll be honest, it was something that I put off a little longer than I should have. And it's a bit of a ordeal to go and do, but if you have the chance, it really is a sombering event. And I mean, if you think of it just as what it is, it's a ship that's been sunk, that there's some sort of eternalism to it, and that being with the oil that's slowly dripping and leaking out of that ship today, to this day, it just sort of has this legacy that lives on. And the sailors there that have been laid to rest there in the attack, and then those continuation of the internment or laying to rest the sailors who, you know, lost shipmates on that ship, the Arizona, and still being buried there to this day. So it's definitely a sombering event, and I poorly articulated that, but if you do have a chance, it's something that's worth going to see. I actually commissioned to O3, which is captain on the Missouri, that's also stationed there, where they signed the treaty to end World War II, and that was definitely quite the honor to be able to promote on that.
That's really neat, and I suppose it was well articulated. It's tough to I suppose rewrite any sort of dynamic paragraph about what's been written about ad nauseum for so many years heretofore, but or prior, I suppose. But really, this is one of the events in which I look at that, and I look at the Joint Task Force bombardment or invasion at Normandy, and the incursions in Africa during that conflict, and obviously what came about is desperation efforts at conscription. And how really it was a joint effort, and mm-hmm. from whence sprang the Air Force out of the years after that conflict, out of the Army. I suppose that's where I came from, when the Army and Navy, and eventually the Air Force after our time, and Walter Reed, Bethesda. That's where I came from, saying, hey, let's leave the rivalry at the damn football game.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's fun at the football game and all, but it was taken way too seriously, as both of us remember at the time. And I remember asking a few sailors at the time, I said, well, okay, my father was in the Army, and amongst my family, my parents, my best friends, so tell me how to feel about this whole hating the Army thing.
Yeah, I think there's an ability to, especially in the academies and the reserve officer training corps at universities, where you create this rivalry because there's rivalry in universities and colleges. And but the seriousness hasn't really set in until you're there working with one another. I think some of the best memories I have are joint operations.
And then the enlisted, I guess, get it from trickle-down effect. I don't know.
Well,
it's like, I have no idea how that came about, but some of the best things, I mean, I know I volunteered to go with the infantry at 29 Palms, and I very much am glad that I did that. It's the whole reason I became a corporal, because my cousins who were Marines, but some, honestly, the best times that I had in service were there in D.C. and working. I mean, we took the name. Yeah, the Army moved from George Avenue to Wisconsin Avenue, where the Naval Hospital was. But we took the name of the Army installation. I felt that was fitting since you guys had to move. But I really look back and I go, "What? We'll never pass that way again." The sailors and soldiers and the airmen who are stationed there in Bethesda. And I know, I suppose it's off track from Pearl Harbor, but it really, it brings us full circle to what we were about and the flag that we served under, and how precious those memories are to me now and to you, I know, as I try and bring the book that I've been working on that you've been helping me to a close. It's like, it's the same flag, and how amazing is it? I mean, you remember Christmas 2011, and then you remember a year later, Christmas 2012, just how different it was and how much everybody came together, and those of us that were in the proverbial trenches together, how amazing that was. It's like, all right, let's enjoy the football game and whatever sporting events, but
you know, it really is. I mean, Pearl Harbor itself, and not to move away from that, but that's, I guess, tying it all together, it really was this genesis of this, you know, horrific multi-geographical assault on all fronts with basically every nation involved. And you know, it goes beyond just remembering the heroism and those who lost their lives there, but really to remember the greater conflict in general and all the lives that touched. I mean, my grandpa, where we talked about Iwo Jima, he would have never gone to Iwo Jima if Pearl Harbor hadn't happened. I mean, that's a lofty assumption, but then him and I, or, you know, down the road, my grandpa and I could sit and as a cross service veterans and have conversations, and there's a bond there, and it's amazing. You know, as much as I miss my grandpa, you know, it's amazing to see these old timers, and I'm sure they wouldn't want to be called that, but making the trip, and maybe one of the last or very, very few left, these trips that they can take to make it to Hawaii and see that site again. And, you know, there will be, I think it was sombering to me to see some of these stories and think, you know, the greatest generation post World War II is, you know, they're especially, you know, with
nearly gone,
nearly gone. And it, I think to me, it's important that we don't pass these milestones, whether it's not the, it's not the 75th or the 100th, even though it's the 76th, to really take the time to remember what happened and really what spurred. I mean, that was, again, like I said, the genesis to a horrific war and the creation of the greatest generation that really came.
Think of it. The Navy wasn't really a transport force at the time, which I know they're not entirely now. Okay, obviously, there was bombardment during the Gulf of Tonkin, and obviously, there has been naval bombardment now. And there's the Seabees and the SEALs. I get that. I'm not besmirching the Navy by any means. But it wasn't merely seen as a transit force then. And the Army and the Marines together at Normandy, there really was it's fine getting fistfights at the bar later if you want. But I suppose it seemed rather silly to me at the time and coming full circle in Bethesda because of my family that had been involved. And again, as close as my father and I are. And his brother, my uncle, was an Army medic, and then I had all my cousins that were Marines, and a handful of were soldiers, and it was me and one cousin that were Navy. It was like, this is, in that part, all right, fine, cool. Enjoy your football game. And I certainly do enjoy it, but it certainly has done my heart good, and I suppose there's the same sailors who didn't appreciate my friendship or affinity for the Army then that would be pissed to hear me now and say, I'm kind of happy the Army's won twice in a row, but, you know, look at, in retrospect, that we're able to enjoy that now, that fascism and communism didn't prevail globally, and that we had the opportunity to say, hey, yeah, the Army and Navy, get out there and duke it out, and
fair enough,
Army's turned it around now twice in a row. I mean, I think that's kind of special.
I agree, man. So, well, you know what? We're at 20 minutes. We're supposed to keep these short, so we'll, you know, there was a good fun chat about the Army-Navy game in Pearl Harbor. And
thank you
yes,
to that
yes,
generation.
Indeed. Yes, and indeed. It's, you know, it'll be a generation that I'm glad that I'll have a memory of knowing.
We didn't have the chance to be at Pearl Harbor or Normandy or Iwo Jima, but as much as we did go through, which obviously was nowhere near as traumatic, but I know we would have done our bit, but we still look backwards and extend a very big thank you.
Indeed. So until our next podcast, my friend.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.